Recently, it came in the news that Japan is going to export stealth antennas that are mounted on naval warships, which are also called destroyer. The word destroyer is actually referred to as a class of ship in naval terminology. These warships are supposed to be like fighter jets of Air Force. These warships are designed to do quick maneuvers, and they are often used to escort large ships like an aircraft carrier, and they all move in a fleet. That is why I said these are like fighter jets of the Air Force. Now, there is not much of a difference between a destroyer and a frigate. The Navy does have something called a frigate. A frigate is much smaller in size compared to a destroyer, and they are faster. So both of them have almost similar functions, but the main difference is in size and operational requirement. Now, a good destroyer must have the necessary technology to defend as well as to attack. And most of the time, its work is to do surveillance. Right now, I believe the US Zoom Vault is the US Navy's largest and most technologically advanced warship in the world. So as I said, most of the time these destroyers conduct surveillance. And for that, you need radars. Mostly, you will find radars are mounted at the mast of a ship. But sonar is mounted at the front end of the hull of a ship. Sonar is also a type of radar. Anything that can transmit and receive a signal is called a radar. Now Japan is going to export stealth antennas to India. These antennas are going to be mounted on the mast of a destroyer. And by the way, antennas are part of radar. Radar is this huge device. Inside a radar, there is a transmitting antenna as well as a receiving antenna. And here Japan is going to supply stealth antennas. That means any kind of communication done through these antennas will be quiet and undetectable. Or in other words, the stealth technology will avoid any kind of detection of the radio frequency spectrum so that the enemy cannot intercept it. Japan is going to export this defense equipment to India under an agreement called the Japan-India Agreement on Defense Equipment and Technology Transfer, which was signed in 2015. Now, India is not the only country with whom Japan has signed similar defense equipment agreements. Japan also exports defense equipment to countries like the United States, Britain, France, Italy, Germany, Australia, Philippines, Thailand, Malaysia, Indonesia, and Vietnam. Now, if you look at the countries to which Japan exports such defense equipment, most of them are Southeast Asian countries, and then one South Asian country, India. And apart from Southeast Asian countries, if you include India, Australia, the United States, and Japan, they're part of the Quad Alliance. Now, close your eyes and imagine which country in Asia has a dispute with India and the Southeast Asian countries. And also, it is a direct threat to the United States hegemony. It is China, right? Even Japan has territorial issues with China regarding some islands that Japan strongly claims as their islands in the East China Sea. So one may say that by selling these defense technologies, Japan's aim is to boost its arms exports. That is true. In fact, a country makes a lot of money by selling defense equipment. In fact, threat, terrorism is a lucrative opportunity for the arms industry. So arms export helps a country make a lot of money. But in this case, apart from arms export, Japan also has a strong reason to sell its state-of-the-art technology to India, and that reason is China's growing assertiveness in the Indo-Pacific region. Now let me also put this in another sense. I'll try to present this from Japanese political perspective. So clearly you can understand that if Japan is exporting its defense equipment to countries, that means it is very much interested to boost its own domestic defense industry. But then if you are aware, Japan also has something called a war renouncing constitution. That means Article 9 of the Japanese Constitution states that war is not an option for Japan to settle international disputes. In simple words, it prohibits Japan the use of force. It also prohibits Japan from maintaining armed forces. And it also denies Japan the right of belligerency, which means Japan cannot act aggressively. All of this sounds like a quality of a peaceful nation, right? But you also have to understand that this article in the Japanese Constitution was imposed by the United States after World War II in 1947. And you also know that the United States dropped two atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki in 1945. From 1945 to 1952, Japan was militarily occupied by Allied powers and primarily commanded by the United States. So after dropping the atomic bomb on Japan, it was the United States who said Japan to be a peaceful country. And that is how this article was added to their constitution, I mean imposed. And that is also one of the reasons why today Japan doesn't have a nuclear weapon or long-range ballistic missile program. Otherwise, think about it. Do you think Japan doesn't have the capability? No, it is not like that. It is because of United States, they don't have such programs. Matlab, jabardasti ka Gandhivad thop diya Japan par, America ne. and today Japan is ruled by the Liberal Democratic Party. I've also said this before, whenever you see the words liberal, democratic, socialist, labor, and if at all that country has some relation or connection with the United States, then blindly just understand that the political parties of that country, if they have these words liberal, democratic, socialist, labor, these political parties will have a tremendous amount of influence or some kind of backing of the United States government, more specifically the US Democrats. You can also see this in South Korea, Australia, New Zealand, many Nordic countries, and many European countries. Anyhow, coming to Japan, for all practical reasons, Japan is a vassal state of the United States. A vassal state means that country will have some degree of independence in its internal affairs, but largely their foreign affairs are dominated by another state. So Japan and South Korea are vassal state of the United States. Now Japan is slowly realizing the fact that they have to boost their domestic defense industry. The current ruling Liberal Democratic Party has also proposed to ease the restrictions to allow more equipment to be exported. And any kind of import and export of defense equipment is part of a country's foreign policy. If Japan is a vassal state of the United States, and its foreign policy is influenced by the United States, so don't you think the United States is not aware of this kind of export that Japan is making to India? Even the United States is aware of it, and they are fine with it. Now, why is the United States fine with it? There are a few reasons behind it, and I will also say that not all are directly beneficial to the United States. Nevertheless, any kind of indirect benefit is also counted as a victory in diplomacy. Now, I'll quickly state the reasons. The first one is, of course, it will boost defense ties between Japan and India. And as I said, both countries have issues with China. One from the western side, one from the eastern side. So the United States has at least two players to keep China engaged. The second reason is, if you are aware, India has a strict policy to diversify sources of arms procurements. That means India does not want to be dependent on any one country. It is interested in buying stuff from anyone in the world who has the best to offer. Simultaneously, India is also running a lot of indigenous programs. So India is very clear about its own defense policy. Now, if you see, this is very beneficial for India. As I said, India does not want to be dependent on any single country. Similarly, it also has a direct benefit for the United States. Because this also makes the United States strongly believe that at least India is also not completely siding with Russia in procuring military equipment. I know it's quite complicated, but this is how it is. You cannot use black and white, you have to walk the path of grey, fully motivated by your self-interest. So the United States has allies. If any of its allies do a job that indirectly benefits the United States, the US is fine with it. And if you remember, in the month of March, when the West was pressurizing India to vote against Russia in the UNSC meeting, and India abstained from voting against Russia, the Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida visited India. Although he had a bunch of things to talk about, but one of them was also to convince India to take Ukraine's side. Even in that case, do you think Japan did this out of its own individual understanding? No, not at all. Of course, the US government told the Japanese Prime Minister to do so. But today here I'm not saying that the US government told Japan to offer naval technology to India. I am not saying that. What I'm trying to say is that even if India and Japan independently conduct any kind of defense trade, it is still considered as an indirect benefit for the United States, as long as Japan is not asking for nuclear weapons from India. Now, I'm sure some viewers think that so much of planning is going on against China, hence China is a poor innocent baby. And many even go on to say that India and China should sort out matter. But they often say that India should listen to China. I mean, people often take the side of China. They think India is the culprit. See, sorting out a matter is a very good thing. But people often say that India should listen to China. And my argument is, why India has to listen? Just because China is economically and militarily big? And let me tell you, India is also very close to it. India can easily defend China. There is no second thought about it. If at all damages have to happen, it will happen to both sides. And you think China's military size and economic size matter? Well, it matters to a certain degree. Let me tell you how. If tomorrow war breaks out near the Himalayan border, do you think China is going to deploy all its military force only in this region? And if at all China does such a dumb thing, there will be a multiple fronts that will open on China from the other side. Everyone is waiting for that one moment when China turns its back and looks at the Himalayan mountains. The other side of the world will blow the living daylights of China. And in Bengali we say, চীনের পক্ষে ভারতকে হারানো এত সহজ নয়। You know, it is not that easy. এতটা সস্তা নয় যত লোকরা ভাবে। So think critically, it is not that easy for China to defeat India. Yes, I agree. There have been few diplomatic blunders in the past from the Indian side. But diplomatic blunders of the past do not mean that today India is the same India. If China has nuclear weapons, even India has. If China has cruise missiles, then the world's fastest cruise missile is with India. If China has ICBMs, even India has. If China has long-range ICBMs, even the Chinese cities are locked on Indian missiles. If China has S-400, even India has S-400. Can China survive on cold, ruthless Himalayan mountains? No, but India can. And India has been doing it since 1984. Siachen Glacier, the world's highest battlefield, is under Indian Army's control. So how is China that powerful? I don't know about the people on YouTube, but the Chinese government realizes all these things. I think yesterday or so, China had its 28th National Congress meeting. Some media reports say that, during the Congress meeting, China played the footage of the Galwan clash that happened on June 15, 2020. This brief footage was part of a longer video that showcased the Chinese Communist Party's achievements. If you remember when those border clashes were happening, some of the Chinese soldiers were carrying cameras. Obviously, this footage came from those cameras. So if at all China considers this as part of its political achievement, then it is nothing but provocation. And they will also not show anything where the Indian soldiers have beaten the living daylights of Chinese soldiers. India openly said that its 20 soldiers were martyred. Did China admit anything from their side? Did they reveal any number? So who is insecure? Who is trying to provoke? So if China can do such provocation from time to time, well, India is also very much capable of doing it. And it does in its own way from time to time. So how do you expect China and India to sort out matters? I'm still saying sorting out matters is a very good thing. But there have to be some terms and conditions that need to be met. And the truth is, the Chinese government's intentions are not good. And I'm saying this statement with utmost objectivity, and there is no subjectivity in it. And it is strictly related to India and China, that's it. I'm not including any other country. Okay, so let me say this with utmost objectivity. Indian soldiers have never entered the Chinese territory. They came inside the Indian territory. And if at all some people say that, well, those territories in India belong to China, and that is why they entered, then let me also tell you this in the most sarcastic manner. Once upon a time, Buddhism was a powerful religion in China. Buddhism flourished as a state religion. And as you know, Buddhism originated in India. So with this logic, even China was part of India and China should be thankful to India. You didn't like it, right? I know you didn't like this. So if at all Chinese citizen or communist sympathizer wants to support the argument in favor of China for their country's past, then let's keep going back until we reach the beginning and you will be left with an existential crisis. And I apologize that this video started on India-Japan defense trade and ended with China's intentions. But nevertheless, it's all interconnected. I hope you found this video informative. Thank you for watching it.